Let's Talk PR and More.
Public relations, media, publicity, integrated communications, marketing, digital, reputation management, and more.
Let's Talk PR and More with award-winning PR strategist Sherry Goldman.
Hi, I'm Sherry Goldman, president of Goldman Communications Group, and welcome to Let's Talk PR and More. My guest today is Anthony D'Angelo. Anthony is interim chair of the Public Relations Department and director of executive education at Syracuse University's Newhouse School of Public Communications. His work in executive education includes programs for the U.S. Department of Defense's Defense Information School, Delta Airlines, and the Cable and Telecommunications Association for Marketing. He brought his extensive career in public relations leadership to Newhouse, having previously held leadership positions in the corporate, agency, and nonprofit sectors, most recently for ITT Corporation. In our industry, Tony has been co-chair of the Commission on Public Relations Education and was 2018 National Chair of the Public Relations Society of America. He's been elected to PRSA's College of Fellows and the Arthur Page Society. Tony is one of the nicest and smartest people I know, so I'm so excited he's joining us here today. Welcome, Tony.
Thanks so much, Sherry. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Great. Let's get started. I think it would be great first if you could share a little bit about your background, a little bit in corporate PR, and now you're truly leading a program at Newhouse at Syracuse, which is so well respected. So help us understand this journey.
Sure. So my career in a nutshell was 8 years on the agency side, then 20 plus in corporate. The majority of that was with the carrier subsidiary of United Technologies, where I was for 15 years.
I think that's where I met you.
I think you're right. So during that time, I pursued my master's degree, an executive master's program that happens to be from the institution I work for now, the Newhouse School. After I earned that degree, I started teaching as an adjunct professor, and I just caught the bug. I love the classroom. I find it incredibly rewarding. And in 2015, I found out about this position called Professor of Practice, where the Newhouse School looks for people from the industry to bring that aspect to the classroom. And I thought, you know, this sounds like me. And I went for it, and I absolutely love it. So unbelievably, I've been here now more than 8 years.
Wow, time flies. I remember when you made that jump.
Cool. Yeah, it does. It goes really fast. But I love the connection between the industry, the practice, and the classroom. I just find that there's so much I can bring from the industry, the practice, into the classroom, and from the classroom out into the industry. And I really like doing that. And so I write about that, and I speak about it occasionally as well. And I find it very rewarding. So I'm a happy guy.
I bet. And I'm also in the classroom as an adjunct, so I totally understand. And one of the things I'm sure you've seen during this period of time, and that you and I have both talked about and are passionate about, is the changing PR. And I know you talked about how to future-proof your PR career. I mean, public relations is changing so much, unrecognizable from the industry I know I joined many, many, many moons ago. And now, certainly with generative AI, is changing and how we teach PR and do it. What do you think?
You really need to do some research into this and understand these megatrends that are affecting the profession. I really firmly believe that there are evergreen aspects to the public relations profession. You need to know how to write. That I do not think is changing.
I hope not.
Also think you hit right. And I think you need to know the fundamentals of strategy. How do you concoct a strategy for your employer or for your client, right? And how do you implement it? How do you evaluate it? Those things aren't going away. But the media in which we ply our trade is just, as you know, it's complete upheaval, you know, in ways that were unimaginable even just a few years ago. I can see parallels, and I think you and I are both of a vintage where we know that we can remember when the internet was introduced, and that roiled our industry, right?
Like, yes, what, I love vintage, Tony. Thank you for putting it that way. I love vintage.
We're like fine wine, Sherry.
Exactly. Love it.
So, you know, and in fact, if you go to YouTube, you can search for a clip from the Today Show when Katie Couric was the co-host, and she was interviewing, I think it was Bill Gates, actually, saying, why do we need this internet thing? What can it do for you? You know, why would I go there for information? These are a lot of the same questions that people asked when social media, again, upended our industry, let's say 15 to 20 years ago. The same questions were asked, and the industry was able to assimilate those changes. The thing is, now we're asking the same questions of generative AI. Why do I need to use that? Why would I go there? What is this strange new world? And I think, to some extent, the pattern is repeating itself, but the pattern is accelerating because the pace of change isn't just fast. It's always been fast, but it's accelerating. So the changes are coming so much more quickly. And I think that it really places a premium on kind of a continual upskilling that needs to happen. And, you know, Richard Edelman in the Edelman Trust Barometer has said that one of the most valuable things that an employer can do to attract young people is to offer that kind of continual upskilling. So now that I'm in higher education, I have a sense of what we can do to prepare our graduates going into communications careers. It's not nearly enough. That has to continue because, again, of the pace quickening. So it's not a 45-degree angle. It's a hockey stick.
Interesting. And I do think one of the things I know I love about PR is that it constantly is changing. So it's not the same. So, I mean, I do love that. But generative AI, I mean, you mentioned it briefly. Part of me is fearful. I think it's going to replace us all. Write that press release. Develop that content. Write that pitch letter, which you talked about good writing, but good PR thinking. I still think it should come from people, but I know I'm vintage. How can we use it as PR professionals? How can students learn to use it? I assume we have to, but how do we use it responsibly and ethically? And is it going to change PR from your perspective?
Well, I think I would actually use the active voice. I think generative AI is changing PR. Okay. It's not going to happen. It's happening. I think, I think that's the case. I'll offer you a couple of statistics. So the PR Council did a poll of public relations professionals at the end of last summer.
Right.
And the response was that 58% of public relations professionals are using generative AI to write. Okay, so 58%, pretty considerable.
A lot,
Muckrack has recently published its State of AI and PR report, which I would commend to anybody's reading. They have found that in the last 8 months, AI adoption has doubled.
Wow.
So, yeah. And those people who answered the Muckrack survey, in their research, they said that 74% of those using it said that the quality of their work has gotten better. And 89% have said, these are of those polled, 89% said that the efficiency has gotten better. So these are tools that a representative sample of practicing public relations professionals are saying, yes, I'm using them widely, and it's helping me in terms of quality and efficiency. Now, I, like you, I do think I would characterize myself as cautiously optimistic about generative AI. That's where I am.
Okay, you're better than me, but trying to adopt.
Yep. Well, and I think, but I want to underscore the caution part of that, because caution is needed. I mean, the potential for mis and disinformation to be created at scale instantly is mind-blowing. And I do think that it is the responsibility of public relations professionals to understand that there's an ethical responsibility. And I think, by the way, there's a regulatory responsibility as well. The PRSA Code of Ethics, one of its core principles is enhancing the profession.
Right.
And what that says is basically you know, that we take responsibility to improve, adapt, and expand professional practices. So this is happening. It's out there being used. I think we need to take responsibility for that. And the areas of potential danger, mis- and disinformation, hijacking of intellectual property, the opportunities that are there for bad actors to corrupt the sources of, and channels of communications are there. They're present. I mean, we've seen examples in the press.
I was just going to say, the New York Times, you and I had talked about that, right? The New York Times article where people are asked, to have it right in front of me, asked AI to create an image of the Joker, and they got all these copyrighted images, basically.
Right.
So here's my question to you. Do one of the things we need to have PR people do now is have more critical thinking? Do we really have to teach or emphasize critical thinking? Because if you're asking AI to generate your content or this, you and I looked at that and go, oh, we could tell that's a copyrighted image. But if somebody's not worldly and they're not out there knowing, would they even know that's a copyrighted image? And maybe if you're on the agency side, you pass that on to your client. Or if you're on the client side, you're using it because you're not, you don't have the bandwidth to understand that that was copyrighted.
Right, exactly. Somebody could very innocently say, you know what, I'd like to go into DALL-E 3 and I'd like an Andy Warhol-like rendition of my boss.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to give that to my boss for her birthday. You really shouldn't do that.
No.
Because, you know, Andy Warhol's estate might have a problem with that, right? Now, you're not widely publishing it, et cetera, but people can unknowingly do that. And by the way, you and I are professional communicators. We're the architects and designers of programs and tools that are out there in the marketplace. People, you know, the consuming public, I'll call them, they don't think about this stuff. I mean, they may because there's such widespread news coverage, but they don't think about it in the same way. You know, a consumer doesn't think about food in the way a farmer thinks about food. They think about from the field to the distribution center to the grocery to your plate, right?
Right.
The consumer thinks about it from the plate to the mouth. We've got to think about the whole ecosystem and take responsibility for it and know what's there. And I think, to your point, it requires a higher level of media literacy.
Media literacy.
And,
okay, tell me what you mean by that.
That, in other words, knowing the medium and what it's capable of.
Okay.
And also what the cautionary points are, and also forcing ourselves to get more familiar with things like machine learning, right? And algorithms and things that a lot of us, you know, aren't naturally, we're not data scientists. And, you know, I sort of, having played around with these tools, and I've been doing a lot of reading and attending seminars and all those kinds of things to get up to speed, I feel like I have a layperson's knowledge of this, but I am not a data scientist. And most of us aren't, right, in PR. But it's incumbent upon us to know the implications of what we do. And I also think that the industry bodies that we're a part of, whether it's PRSA or the Paid Society or the Global Alliance, these associations should be a voice for the responsible use of AI. And I see that happening now. It's certainly, you know, of great interest and has everybody's attention in our industry on a global basis. And I think the other part of this is the regulations. And it seems like every other week, the tech titans are hauled up before Congress to testify about, okay, what's the plan here for while we regulate this?
And there is none.
I mean,
they're hauled up there, but nothing's changing, at least not one I've seen.
And I do think that that needs to happen. And in the meantime, I think what we can do as responsible professionals is, I think, disclose the use of AI. I think it's the right thing to do. If I quoted from a speech that you gave, I would reference it, right? I would cite it as the source.
Right.
And I don't think it would be very difficult for us to adopt a similar protocol for the use of generative AI. And believe me, there's a lot that is brewing in the courts right now about if you use generative AI to, I don't know, whatever it is, write an article, write a feature article. Well, can you protect that by copyright? It's not so clear, right? So those kinds of questions really need to be figured out. And it was definitely an eye-opener for me when the heads of these companies like Google, Alphabet, Microsoft, X, et cetera, they told legislators they'd like to hit the pause button on some of this generative AI development because the danger for society to get out in front of its headlights is significant.
Yeah, no, I agree. And that's part of the reason it's scary for me on so many levels, certainly all of that. You know, and then, you know, you mentioned somebody taking that Andy Warhol-like photo and giving it to the press. But what if that person thought, oh, that would work for my audience. I'll adapt that into a consumer, you know, a social media meme.
Yeah.
And now suddenly it's in quote unquote content. It's on social. They put it on their website.
Yeah.
You've got legal implications for companies and brands. Where do we have to hit that pause button? And I know I taught ethics a couple weeks ago and I downloaded PRSA's new ethics for AI because normally I just teach the code of ethics. And I'm like, here's the 10-page document on ethics for AI and went through some of it with them and, you know, deer in headlights kind of thing. But we have to reach more professionals who may not be part of the Public Relations Society of America or the PR Council and really have them understand what they're doing because, you know what? They are using it. Or companies are going, you know what? I don't need to hire a PR person now because my director of sales can say, hey, ChatGPT, write me a press release. So why should I pay a smart PR counsel to either be an agency or an in-house public relations communications person when, you know what? I can now do this myself. Danger, danger, danger to me.
Right. Well, I can tell you, Sherry, that I think for you can absolutely do that if you choose to. I would not recommend it.
And
let's say you had a client that was just saying, you know what, I don't want to pay your hourly rate. I'm going to have my intern ChatGPT this thing and we'll be fine. Except ChatGPT, first of all, hallucinates. It will not give you perfect information. It is not necessarily as well written as you would write it, right?
Right.
So There definitely needs to be an editing and oversight function for generative AI. And there is a science behind prompt engineering, how you prompt generative programs to give you the best output. And we can talk a little bit about that.
Yeah.
But for the purpose of eliminating functions or eliminating jobs, now the programs aren't there now, at least not yet. But I would recommend to anybody that if you're using them, you have to check the output. A colleague of mine who's written extensively about AI and uses it a lot, more than I do, his name is Jean Valen. He has spoken at various PRSA conferences. He, a former chair of the Global Alliance, he's very active in the UK's CIPR, Chartered Institute for Public Relations, and has written AI guidelines. You know how you can Google yourself and you see what you get?
Absolutely.
So you can ChatGPT yourself and see what you get. And what he got was something that was, and I'm estimating here, let's say it was 60% right. But it gave him a couple of college degrees that he didn't have in his bio. And oh, by the way, it said he died 3 years ago. So with that as an example, if you want to go ahead and have ChatGPT write for you, be very, very careful.
Yeah, no, we shouldn't. And we shouldn't, you know, even for students, have them rely on it because you need to learn that critical thinking. Yet it's there. Yeah. So how do we kind of harness it? I mean, things kind of. How do people, you know, harness that? That's always going to be, I think, the balancing act for me.
Yes. And I think, a couple of general guidelines I would offer. First of all, and frankly, I find this fun, go into these programs and play around.
Right.
See what you get, right? Just for your own edification and, in my case, amusement, because it's really interesting, right, to see what comes out. By the way, I will recommend a website for you and your listeners.
Great.
Called There's an AI for That.
Never heard of that.
So
go ahead.
If you go to There's an AI for That, I'm going to bet you you wouldn't believe the number of programs and tools that are available. You can search it for, you know, I want a program to design PowerPoint slides, or I want, you know, I want a program to take real-time dictation or note-taking for my meetings so I don't have to write meeting minutes. It is incredible. And by the way, the Muckrack State of AI and PR report said that last year there were about 7,000 generative AI tools.
Oh, my gosh.
This year there are 12,000. So you look at that percentage growth and you start to realize kind of the dizzying effect of this acceleration that's going on, that's changing the game. And part of this is, and I actually think this is healthy, it keeps us all humble, you know, because there's so much to learn. And you sort of, I had a colleague describe this as, I feel like I'm chasing this train and I'm holding on by my fingernails to the caboose, you know, as it goes rocketing down the track to try to learn this. And I do think that's kind of an accurate description. And most of us are in the same boat. So if we approach this with a kind of one, the recognition that there's much to learn, we need to take responsibility, and it's moving that fast, then you put yourself in a position where you can learn more. And by that learning, I truly don't think you're going to do much damage. The other part of your question, I think that's very interesting, which is, how do you utilize this? I would recommend a learning about prompt engineering, which sounds very highfalutin.
It does.
But there are some basic rules that you can use when you, let's say, you prompt ChatGPT that will help you. For example, and I'm referencing here a presentation I heard from Mark McLennan, a former National PRSA chair.
And he's been on my show recently. So he's been
here. Oh, great.
Yeah, he's fabulous.
So, you know, three steps that I heard from Mark are, define AI's role. So you need to literally tell a ChatGPT, imagine you're in public relations and your role in this is to take this product, it's an automotive product, and here are its benefits, and develop a really strong pitch. Then you set the target. Here's who you're writing for. These are the characteristics of that target, right?
Right.
And then you make the ask, right? Here are the basics of my pitch letter. I want you to improve it along these lines and see what you get, right? And one thing that I learned from Mark, and I love this, is that there is actually a ChatGPT cheat code, which is this. You can ask ChatGPT to make you better by asking, from now on, ChatGPT, whenever I ask a question, suggest a better way to ask the question and if I would like to use it.
Wow.
And then ChatGPT will suggest it and ask you if you like to use it. So in a way, you know, we're in the business of public relationships, and kind of the more sci-fi aspect of this is that we need to develop a relationship with these programs. Right? You can think of it that way. There is a back and forth there that you don't get out of your PC, right?
No, definitely not. And as somebody who's really a solopreneur, I mean, it came from a large agency and now it's more solopreneur, it almost feels like it could give you a team if you don't have a team.
I think that's true. And so there are...
At least for brainstorming, not for execution, but for brainstorming kind of thing.
Brainstorming is one of the most valuable things that you can do. The initial concepting to come up with rough ideas is I think, a healthy and productive way to do things. There are executive assistants available right now. If you're the CEO, okay, we're about to launch our new product into these markets, and with some other information to give context, you can ask, what are the three most likely things that can go wrong? You'll get an output, and it might not be perfect, but it's enough to get your wheels turning. So there's value in that, right? You can have this executive assistant. And a lot of other things that you can do are editing and proofreading, right?
Okay.
It'll help you with that. You've just written something, it's 750 words. you need it to be cut in half for a particular tactic that you need to implement. It'll do that. It'll cut it in half. It might not be perfect, but you'll do it faster than if you just had to sit there and edit, you know, cut the thing from 500 words to 250 or whatever the job to do is. So in the same way that if you and I are digging ditches, if I'm using a shovel and you're using a steam shovel, you're going to beat me.
Gotcha.
That's it. It's going to happen, right? And or if in a math contest, you know, if I'm doing long division on paper and you got a calculator on your iPhone, you're going to beat me. And I think part of the economics of this, you know, and the drive for greater effectiveness and efficiency is with the cautions that we need to have in place, absolutely, is going to drive acceptance of this. And what I hope is that it will lead us, if it frees us up from, I would love AI to, if I'm writing an academic paper, I would love to never have to write another bibliography. I mean, come on. It's terrible. It's formulaic. I'm probably going to have typos in it, right?
Right.
So if I can have that done with a keystroke, I'm in. You know, that's great. And I can spend more time actually thinking and writing than doing that stuff. And I think there's all kinds of analogies for that with the responsible use of generative AI.
Sounds perfect. We actually are out of time, Tony. So I'm going to ask you one quick question and then I have to go. So Based on what you said, you're more optimistic than pessimistic about how generative AI is changing PR and that we're still good in that sense. Our profession is still safe.
I think we are, but I also think that the people who will be safest as this technology, which is both, it's fascinating and scary. I don't want to minimize that caution is needed here. I think that the future is going to favor the strategist in this, not the person who is, well, for example, a week or so ago, I saw a demonstration of Signal AI's new text to video or animation program. It's called Sora.
Right.
It was incredible what could be generated. I couldn't believe the realistic images and also the fantastic images that it was able to generate. And my first thought was, wow, I'd hate to be an animator right now. What's it going to mean for the animation industry? And there will be disruption in the same way that there was job disruption when the U.S. went from an agrarian to an industrial society, right? There will be roles, but they're going to change a lot. I think that those who can think critically about application of the technology and also use it ethically and responsibly will be the ones who benefit. And also, I'm going to put a plug in for basic skills such as writing and editing and strategy formulation, because I think those are still going to be necessary because we're going to have to evaluate and apply the work that's being done. I was talking to a DEI consultant who said that she was very concerned that one of her clients was using a generative AI program to write the company's DEI statement.
Nice.
Right?
Yeah.
And so, and she said, you know, the statement itself was okay. It wasn't bad. But the value of developing a DEI statement is putting in the work. And if you short circuit the work, what have you learned as an organization? And I think in public relations, we got to be careful not to short circuit the work. So if you're going to evaluate a plan, right, generated by a generative AI program, you better know how to formulate the plan first. And the same goes with writing and editing and those kinds of functions. So I think those things are going to remain.
Sounds perfect. And that's a great way to leave this. Tony, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, Sherry. It's been a pleasure.
That's Let's Talk PR and More for today. You can find more information about the show and about me at Goldman Communications Group's website, www.goldmanpr.net. And if you want to hear this show again, you can listen to the podcast, which is posted on Goldman Communications Group's website, as well as on your favorite podcast sites, including Apple, Spotify, Amazon, and iHeartRadio. Thank you again for listening. I look forward to talking PR and more with you all again next week.